Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast, right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. It's off season. It's not even pre-season, although that is beginning soon. The players will be coming, trickling back to get some fitness under their belts because, amazingly, the Community Shield takes place next weekend. That's right, August 29th, Arsenal versus Liverpool in the Community Shield. I would say that if you were to volunteer for either side, you could probably get a game for this one, because I don't know that Mikel Arteta and Jurgen Klopp will be using their most experienced players. I mean, why don't they just do something like, was it in Pro Evolution 2 or whatever it was? I can't quite remember which one of the Pro Evolution soccer games it was, where you could play as penguins or dinosaurs or ostriches or something like that. Why don't they just get 11 Liverpool fans, 11 Arsenal fans, put them in outrageously oversized, hilarious costumes which make them fall over, and let them run around Wembley for 90 minutes. 29th of August, playing the Community Shield. The Premier League, of course, doesn't start until the 12th of September. So, you know, there are risks involved in playing some of your good players in there. But look, we will cover that game on next week's show and give it all the importance that it deserves with a full, I would say, 7 or 8 second preview. I'm kidding, of course. We will have to talk about it a bit, and of course we will hear from Mikel Arteta ahead of that game for the first time since the end of the season, really. And of course, a lot has happened since the season is over, between, you know, things going on off the pitch at Arsenal. There will be hopefully some things going on in relation to on the pitch matters, whether those are signings or contract extensions, none of which have happened just yet at the time of recording. But maybe by this time next week, there will be a few exciting things to talk to Mikel Arteta about. Have you ever, let me ask you this question. It is the off season, so I can do this. I can waffle. Have you ever become hyper aware of one of your own feet? Like, you know you have feet, but you don't ever think about them, do you? You don't go along going, oh, there's my foot, there's my other foot. You just don't. They're there, you walk on them, and that's the way it works. But lately I've been getting this thing where I just become hyper aware of one of my feet. Could be the left one, could be the right one, and all of a sudden you're there going, this foot is very there, isn't it? I mean, it's writ large upon my consciousness. And the worst part is that when you become really hyper, super aware of your own foot, it's very difficult to not be aware of it because, you know, your feet are important parts of your body. I don't know what's going on here, but I've got it going on right now as I'm talking to you with my left foot. My left foot is just super there. So my right foot is just there. I don't care. I don't really care about my right foot, but my left foot is like, hello, hi, I'm right here, just being a foot, just hanging around at the end of your leg. It's that foot, you can't kick a football as well as you can with your other foot, you know, your right foot, that one, you can really smash a football, but with your left foot, you can't really do it with me, can you? I'm here, so I am. So I don't know what to do about this. Seems to be happening with some measure of frequency lately. Maybe that's to do with other things that are going on in the world. Who knows? It's been a strange and scary time for all of us. Perhaps my feet are very sensitive to, I don't know what. Maybe there's some shit going on at the Earth's core. Sounds bizarre, but would you rule it out in 2020, given all the other stuff that's happened? I would not. Anyway, I'll keep you up to date if there are any further developments in my foot awareness. A little bit later on, we will be talking about Arsenal youth, the under-23, some of the things that are going on at that level with our youth football expert from Arseblog News, George Bird. He'll be along a little bit later on. But first up, let's bring in another Arseblog News stalwart. It is Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm glad that the season review post that we've been working on most of the week is now done and dusted. We went fairly in-depth, I think you would say, on the 2019-20 season. 15,000 words of a long read available to everybody now over on Arseblog News. So much happened.
Yeah, I mean, that post kind of took on a life of its own, didn't it? I mean, we were going to do a short timeline and then suddenly it just sprawled and sprawled. Yeah, it was mad. I mean, there were certain things when I was reading through the kind of Arseblog News archive that really just sort of made me laugh. You know, players that I just completely forgot had even started the season with us, like Monreal, even Mkhitaryan, Chamberlain, not Chamberlain, Carl Jenkinson playing in pre-season. yeah, madness. I mean, all of that feels just like a complete lifetime ago. Obviously, the entire world has completely changed.
Where is Carl Jenkinson now? I've completely, in the mists of time, I've completely forgotten where Carl Jenkinson is. Nottingham Forest.
I think he's sold into Nottingham Forest, yeah. I don't know how he got on. I mean, obviously...
Doesn't look great.
They missed out on promotion, didn't they?
Mm. What was there one thing in particular or one theme or anything from that review that when you went back through, because we went from like July, the start of July 2019, just as preseason is beginning, right until basically present day, because a few things have happened post-season that we thought we should touch on as well, or just, you know, chronicle, if you like. But was there anything in particular that stood out for you?
The protracted captaincy saga.
Mm.
And while on the surface of it, it doesn't look like it should have been a big deal, and even retrospectively, it shouldn't be a big deal. Everything that kind of went along with it, the Xhaka fallout, what that kind of... You know, how that reflected on Emery, how the fans felt about Emery's treatment of Xhaka and the way that whole process played out. That kind of, for me, just when you look back at it, there were alarm bells everywhere there.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say the Koscielny thing happened in early to mid July, and it was towards the end of September, if I remember correctly, that we. Then we actually appointed a captain. The prevaricating over that, I think, you know, I'm not here to sort of bat for Granit Xhaka in terms of how he reacted, but I really feel like there was sort of touch papers lit under that situation for quite some time. It was bubbling for ages and ages and ages, and I do think in no small part it was down to Emery just delaying a decision, which was a really easy one to make.
I don't think he wanted to make a controversial decision or something that he thought would be greeted with negativity. And actually all he did was end up making the decision everyone knew he was going to make anyway, but bring loads of negativity upon himself, I feel like.
Yeah, and Xhaka. In fairness.
And Xhaka, of course, yeah. I mean, he kind of became this lightning rod, didn't he, by the time that, you know, the Crystal Palace situation actually played out. But again, I mean, it just feels like an absolute lifetime ago. Yeah. I mean, what that Emery, you know, dilly-dallying kind of reflected was, it was something I kind of had deep down in me, a worry, which was I just don't think this guy's the right person. I don't think he's capable of being decisive enough to sort of make the big decisions. And this was a guy who also wasn't being asked to make all of the decisions. You know, he wasn't a manager. He was strictly a head coach. And this really should have been quite a simple one. But, you know, we know it didn't work out for him in the end.
No, I think the thing that stood out for me was as the season went on, the increased presence or public profile of agents dealing with various subjects. And, you know, I don't need to name names, but, you know, there are players and there are agents who have been fairly outspoken throughout this season. So I think that was something that really stood out for me as as different or not quite what we're used to at Arsenal. You know, particularly the Kia Jurabchian stuff. You know, we've heard from agents before. Of course we have. Players have agents. They talk. They posture. They put their position forward in public for the benefit of their client or whatever it might be. But, you know, the whole David Luiz business and Jurabchian talking about how, well, you know, there are certain things involving the structures of Arsenal that need to be sorted out or will be sorted out, I think he said. And then we were sort of sitting there going, well, what is he talking about? What exactly does he mean about the structures? And then the head scout gets let go and the scouting department gets taken apart. And you know, in time, perhaps we'll see those things as positive in some way. If there's a restructuring of those departments and it makes us better, that's all well and good. But, you know, the idea that an agent going on TalkSport is talking about Arsenal that comfortably, that really just stood out for me as something that Arsenal in the past would not have tolerated as a football club.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were certain ways of doing things. I kind of always think back to the kind of Peter Hill Wood era, and it was kind of a closed shop, wasn't it? I mean, word didn't really get out. Occasionally he might do an interview with someone at the News of the World or something, but realistically you just didn't get anything out of the hierarchy. And yeah, we found ourselves in a situation this season where a guy who has the ear of the most important people in the hierarchy is there basically airing our dirty laundry in public on TalkSport almost weekly.
Even up until last week, in fairness, he was on there talking about Sven Mislintat and some of the things that he did during his time at the club. So, you know, it wasn't just a one-off.
But it's a really difficult situation for us. I mean, privately, they might be able to say, look, Keo, we're not very comfortable with this. But realistically, we know that if we're leaning on his contact book and this is something we're comfortable doing, we don't really have a leg to stand on. He's not an employee, so we can't kind of tell him off, castigate him for behaving in a particular way. I mean, we kind of know him. It may be that, you know, Edu doesn't really care that Kia Jurabchian talks like this. I think it, you know, for a club of our standing, it's not a great look. I could just about sort of put it to one side and go, well, okay, if we start delivering on the pitch, then they have a lot less things to be going on to TalkSport to kind of sort of gossip about, which is basically what this is. He's a bit of a gossiper. He kind of likes kind of maintaining his profile, and I guess that's worked for him over the years.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, look, I think it's something that happens maybe elsewhere and isn't maybe taken quite the same way that we would take it. But, you know, as it's laid out in that season review, and people can find it over on Arse Blog News, you can just sort of see, you can build your own picture of perhaps how comfortable certain people felt about talking about Arsenal, you know, when they're not employees of Arsenal, talking about specifics that are going on behind the scenes, whatever their connections to people who work at the club or who used to work at the club. It still didn't quite sit right with me. But I think really the key takeaway is just the sheer volume of everything that happened with, you know, Emery, with Arteta, with Freddie Ljungberg, with the pandemic, with the shutdown, with the lockdown, with the restart, with the, you know, some of the results, and ultimately, thankfully, ending in what was just an amazing FA Cup win against Chelsea. You know, if you'd sit down and written that as a script, people would say, no, that's not believable.
I mean, the funny thing is obviously, you know, in the first half of the season, I think a lot of people were looking at the Amazon documentary that Spurs were having made about them and going, oh, aren't Spurs having a really dramatic season? And I guess, you know, that will probably be quite a good watch, but I don't feel in the last sort of 6 weeks or something that their season ended up with the kind of narrative arc that the Arsenal one has had, you know, this kind of almost redemption story, you know, back comes this hero, former player who kind of, you know, brings everybody back together, goes to Wembley, wins against the odds. I mean, yeah, ours was really the Hollywood script. There was a kind of, I don't know, sort of, it was all right for a bit, but then kind of petered out a bit, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I pay as little attention to Tottenham as I possibly can. I certainly won't be watching that series. I'm sure people will post things on Twitter and stuff, which will be amusing. But I find things like that just a little bit uncomfortable. I would really, really hate for Arsenal to do that.
Well, if the money men come calling, I imagine. I think we'll take everything we can get. £2.5 million might get a load of people their jobs back by the looks of things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, having sat here 5 minutes ago and basically said that it's a bit uncomfortable airing your, you know, dirty laundry in public, that is exactly what documentaries like that do. They really are. They have to be kind of properly fly on the wall to make them worth doing in the first place. The Sunderland one was quite a good watch, I thought.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, actually. But I think there's something maybe a little bit different when it's such a kind of tragic story, you know?
I didn't have anything against Sunderland, for example. And I wasn't jealous of, you know, their successes or their, you know, or their failures, as it were. I mean, I didn't watch the City one.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't, I saw a few clips doing the rounds and it made me not want to watch the rest of it, to be perfectly honest. I didn't watch the second series of the Sunderland one either. You know, just not quite my thing. All right, well, look, let's move on. Few bits and pieces to talk about this week. Not a huge amount, of course, because it is still the off-season. The new away kit is out. As a man of keen sartorial taste, please give me your marks out of 10 for that kit.
Oh, 2 out of 10. I mean, okay. I honestly like the idea behind it. I genuinely like the idea of kind of trying to play off the marble halls and all the rest of it.
Do you think
how the story got sold, but the execution, I mean, it looks like an execution. I mean, it's awful.
It does look a lot more like blood splatters than Marvel. Do you feel that this was the story behind it, that it was a case that they went, let's make something based on the famous marble halls, or they made something and then went, how the fuck do we sell this? Marble halls, do it.
I mean, I would love to know the process that happens in the kit design, because I'm almost certain that you end up with a designer who probably halfway through the process loses his soul because enough people have become involved and this kind of thing that he'd created or she had created has suddenly been kind of torn to bit by bit, and you end up with what you've got. I bet the original looked nothing like this.
Yeah. Football shirt says, what is the famous quote? A camel is a horse designed by committee. So every football shirt is a kind of cloth camel, if you like.
Yeah. Well, look, to be honest, I'm willing to give Adidas the benefit of the doubt. They've bought themselves a lot of leeway with last year's home kit. So, you know, I'm fine with them making the odd mistake. I say mistake. I mean, I'm sure it'll get bought by loads of people. I've already seen quite a lot of excitement about it today.
Yeah. Look, it might be one of those things that we grow to, I was going to say love. I'm not necessarily sure that's going to be the case. Love perhaps is a bit too strong, but it might be one that we grow to have reasonably adequate feelings for.
I think if the team wins in it, automatically grows in popularity, right?
Yeah.
And then it becomes something of a cult classic. I mean, the only reason the last white kit we had was the one that we beat AC Milan with, which is very similar to this, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I kind of, you know, I have very good memories of that one particular night. I don't really remember us wearing that kit that often. So that's the other thing that's always kind of curious. Like, if you've got a red and white home kit, why make a red and white away kit? It seems a bit odd.
But white and red, I guess.
The blue third kit will end up getting used quite a lot more.
Yeah, I can't picture what that one is. I'm sure there are pictures out there. Yeah.
It looks very, very similar to our blue third kit for this season, I think.
Right, okay. So a lot of imagination has gone into this season's kits. Anyway, look, those are small
things.
The
video was good, though, right?
The video was good. I'm not sure the statue of David Seaman was was quite what I was expecting, but I have to say I did laugh at that. That was a nice little touch, particularly the placement of the gloves.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, I thought it was good. That and the ponytail really got me.
Yeah, it was good. And then, like, I did look at the, there's a bit, isn't there, where they go into the like a gallery or whatever it is, and there's Kieran Tierney with his Tesco bag, and there's Gabriel Martinelli, I think, William Saliba, Bukayo Saka. Yeah, yeah. It just sort of gives you this sense of the future, if you like, of Arsenal, and hopefully these young players can be a big part of that with their, you know, various things that we all love about them, their footballing talent, of course, their Tesco bags and all the rest.
Yeah, and I think the other really interesting thing was just how on a par they put the Arsenal women's team.
You know, yeah,
the
that's
entire
true.
Thing
yeah.
was kind of like, you know, we're treating both sides equally. And I thought that was a really kind of good marketing move. And I think it, you know, I definitely feel like the club have moved that way in their coverage of the women over the course of the last two seasons as well.
Well, seeing as we've just come on to them, I suppose we should wish them the best of luck because they are playing a Champions League quarterfinal against PSG at the weekend. They're going to San Sebastian, about which I'm particularly jealous, although I'm not sure they're going to have a lot of time to wander around and eat pinchos and stuff like that. Maybe afterwards, who knows? But it is the tournament, the Women's Champions League tournament is taking place in San Sebastian and Bilbao. Over a period, I think, of a week or 8 days, something like that. So, yeah, good luck to the Arsenal women on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. We need them to do European football a favour by knocking out PSG, I think.
Yeah.
Can't let them earn the double.
I'm very... What are your thoughts on the Champions League final?
I shrug of the shoulders, really. I mean, I guess I quite like watching Serge Gnabry be brilliant. So I think Bayern will do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of in that situation where it's like, you know, shit sandwich or shit sandwich with some extra shit on top when it comes to who wins. But, you know, given the ownership and everything else, and, you know, Bayern are far, far, far from my favourite team, I still want them to beat PSG. And it would be great if Serge Gnabry could do the business for them. What a player he's turned into.
Yeah, fantastic goal, wasn't it, the other night?
Mm.
Wow. He's, you know, the thing is, I think all Arsenal fans sort of knew he was a really good player, even when he wasn't having that good spell at West Brom. You know, if you'd seen him when he came through the ranks and that early goal I think he scored against Swansea, he really was like, you know, there was something about him. You could see his in-game intelligence and he had the kind of physical prowess to go with that. And, you know, I knew he was going to be a good player. Obviously, the injuries kind of slowed him down a little bit. But people seem to have got this idea that we let him go. And that just wasn't the case because he went off to the Olympics and had a storming Olympics with Germany. And I remember at the time, like, Wenger was very, very keen to try and get him to sign a new deal. And we just couldn't get that over the line. And at that point, there was all this weird stuff going on with Bayern Munich kind of tapping him up via Werder Bremen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that was a very weird move in the end, but it, you know, it seems like Bayern played a long game and used someone else to get him, really.
Yeah, I mean, they are good at stuff like that. And, you know, if you're Serge Gnabry and Bayern Munich come calling, you know, why wouldn't that be attractive to you? I do think, you know, in the mists of time, we've forgotten that he was being played quite regularly in the team at 18 years of age, and he was really, really exciting. And you do, I mean, my regret, of course, is how it ended up. And I don't think anybody at Arsenal who was involved in the decision to send him on loan to a Tony Pulis West Brom can look back on that and think that was the right thing to do. It certainly wasn't. But I wonder what might have happened if he hadn't had that very serious injury. It was a really bad knee injury. He was out for over a year. And he needed, I think, to go on loan somewhere and, you know, rebuild his fitness and rebuild his confidence. But had that not happened to him, you know, I feel like he would have really established himself in the Arsenal team.
Yeah, I think you were talking to Clive on one of the Arscasts, was it last week? Clive sounded very kind of keen to make sure that the young players this time around, or this generation of young players, are far more protected by the coaching team. So not to overplay them, not for them to get injuries, because we've seen so many young players at Arsenal kind of pick up really serious injuries after about 2 years in the first team. And then they're never quite the same. I mean, you could You know, you could even look at someone like Jack Wilshere, for example, in that, you know, and some of those incidences are not necessarily about being overplayed. Some were impact injuries, but there's this sort of, you know, it's about just sort of making sure that you don't burn them out, really. But yeah, no, Gnabry was great. I think he'll be a star of the game for years to come, and maybe one day we'll get to have him back at Arsenal.
Well, he does. You know, he doesn't have any ill will towards Arsenal at all. You know he's really connected to the club. I like his tweets when, you know, he scores a lot of goals against Tottenham and then tweets North London is red. And I saw a picture doing the rounds during the week. I can't remember where, but like, you know, one of the Bayern conference calls during lockdown, he's wearing the new Arsenal away kit, you know. So I don't think it's a question of a falling out with Arsenal. It is a big shame, of course, that he's not still with us, but that's kind of the way it goes in football sometimes, unfortunately. Let's just talk very quickly about the fixtures, because the Premier League fixtures were released yesterday as people are listening to this. We start with Fulham away, which is, I'm not going to say an easy game by any means, but it's a nice game to start with. But some testing fixtures in the first couple of weeks. We've got Liverpool away, we've got Manchester City away, and we've got Manchester United away from home. So Mikel Arteta is a manager who is presented, it seems, with more than his fair share of challenges by things that are completely out of his hands, whether it's, you know, a virus, whether it's injuries, whether it's red cards, whether it's the fixture computer. And I have to say, I feel for him a little bit with that kind of a start.
Yeah, I mean, if we really need to hit the ground running, really, because it's very easy to find yourself a long way behind the leaders quite quickly. But yeah, I mean, those away games in a row are Fulham, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Leeds, which could be tough, Spurs. I mean, that's the away games that take us all the way through till December. That is really tough. I mean, I did try and put a sort of positive spin on it on Twitter this morning when I saw it, which is basically on the plus side, there won't be any home fans there at that point, probably.
Yeah.
We'll see how many fans end up in stadiums by Christmas time, but I don't imagine it'll be that many. But you know, I guess we could take positive vibes from the fact that we obviously had some good results towards the end of last season, Liverpool and City and Chelsea. It was more those sides with the low block that we struggled against, wasn't it? That Villa game in particular kind of comes to mind. So it's just really hard to tell what the season's going to be like. I mean, it's just so unusual to start a season with this, you know, very, very short break, with a transfer window which is going to run into it was about 6 weeks after the season starts. Probably less than that, actually, isn't it? It's more like three or four. There's just so many unknowns. I mean, they're still with the no fans thing. It's really hard to call it. But yeah, on paper, that looks like a really difficult start.
It does. And one of the other aspects of this, which may not affect some people listening to this, depending on where they are in the world and the TV deals that are done in those countries, but in the UK and in Ireland, even though we have slightly more Premier League games than you do generally, because we can get a 3 p.m. Saturday game now and you guys can't, but they're not carrying on this broadcasting of all the games. I know the Arsenal Supporters Trust are quite exercised about this, because fans are not going to be let in the stadiums. And it may mean that fans can't see their teams on television in the UK, unless, of course, you know, they go via illegal streams. And God forbid anybody would do anything like that when it comes to watching a game of football. But like, I mean, it's one thing for you or me, for listeners to this podcast. You know, a lot of people don't quite know how to do that or to make that happen. And I wonder if that's something that might become an issue over the coming weeks in terms of what games are going to be on TV and how strongly fans and fans groups are going to be represented in those terms. Because, you know, if you don't get to see your team, if you're a season ticket holder, for example, and you're not allowed basically see your team play a game, it's going to hurt even more.
Yeah. And it's a completely different experience being at home and watching football compared to being in the stadium, because you just don't get any of the, I guess, the the ability to blow off steam, whether that be in the pub afterwards or even screaming expletives at the referee or something.
Not that you would ever do that, Andrew.
Not that I would ever do that, no. I'm not entirely sure what the thinking is, unless they're kind of concerned that they would have to commit to the entire season and every single game being on. Which I think is something that the Premier League are probably exploring. You know, La Liga have got their own TV channel and you can pay per view to just, you know, basically have a subscription to La Liga TV and watch every single game. And I imagine that the Premier League are probably looking at going down that kind of model, which would then take out the middlemen, which currently exist, and take, you know, loads and loads of their money. If they just got 10 quid off everybody globally, you know, the Premier League would be absolutely rolling in it more than they already are.
Yeah.
But I mean, as for the ticketing issue, I mean, I've heard a few whispers about what might happen. It's just going to lead to a lot of disappointment if only a certain number of fans can go in to a stadium on a match day.
Yeah.
The experience is going to be weird anyway if you're all supposed to be kind of sitting a long way from each other. I mean, I've been at the occasional League Cup game in the years gone by where you've got a couple of rows completely empty in front of you. And it obviously just, it's not the same. It's not why you go to football, to basically be standing around with nobody near you.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how it goes. I mean, I you can't really blame the club or anything. I mean, everybody's in the same boat, but yeah, they're going to have to be quite on top of the logistics of it all.
Yeah, look, that's fair to say. You know, they can only operate within the guidelines that are put in place by the various authorities, the Premier League, and obviously the government advice that goes along with that. You know, I do have a fear, and I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, as we head into the winter months and maybe cases rise again, you know, the idea of fans being let back into the stadium might not be quite as sensible as it seems, even if it is on a limited basis. But, you know, we'll wait and see. And maybe if more supporters groups like the Arsenal Supporters Trust, and I think, you know, people like the Football Supporters Federation or Football Fans Association, they've rebranded. I can't remember what they're called now. But, you know, for people to be able to see their teams live is hugely important. So maybe we'll get something done with that. We were going to talk a little bit about transfer rumours, but there's not a lot going on, Andrew. There's Gabriel from Lille. There's stories about OR from Lyon, but, you know, there's no real substance to those at the moment. And we might cover those in the Arscast Extra on Monday if stuff happens over the weekend. So we'll leave it there. As ever, Andrew, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter at @AAllenSport, at @AAllenSport. And of course, Andrew is the co-host of the Left Field podcast, talking about football and other sports with an Irishman. Of all the things, just search for Left Field podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and you can do the subscribe thing.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, with me now on the Arscast to take a look at what's happening at youth level is our youth correspondent on Arsblog News, the man who knows all there is to know about what's happening at Arsenal at under 23 and below. It's George Bird. Hi, George.
Hi.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on structurally at that level, at youth level. We know Steve Ball took over last year from Freddie Ljungberg. Are there any other changes, or have there been any other changes put in place over the course of last season, which obviously was truncated because of the COVID-19 situation?
But there have been a lot of changes to the scouting network that's been well documented, and we're really starting to see Per Mertesacker's influence as the academy manager now. He's really putting his own stamp on things. We've seen recently we've signed George Lewis and Tim Akinola, and we're going to sign Jonathan Dinze as well. These are all players who were released by other clubs, so it's a change in approach, the way we're doing things. And I must say I'm a bit sceptical about that, really, because there's been talk about we could make money from developing these players and then selling them, but I don't think you'd probably be able to make like more than 1 or 2 million from them. But to be honest, I can understand signing Lewis and Akinola, because Lewis is a winger and we don't have that many of them in the under-23s, and Akinola is a defensive midfielder, and again, we need someone in that position. But the Dinze one is a bit weird, because I think he's quite a good player. I've seen him against Arsenal a few times, but we've got quite a lot of centre-backs already at youth level, so it just seems a bit odd, really. But maybe they think he's got some raw qualities, and if they can coach him how they want to, then things could turn out okay. But I think we seem to have a lot of defenders at youth level, but I'm not really sure if that's because Mertesacker was a defender himself and then he's trying to give them advice and try and progress them to the next level. But Mertesacker's done quite a lot of good work. I mean, he can't really take credit for the players that really got into the first team, like Willock and Nelson and Saka, because they were going to get in already. But he's done a lot of work with younger players. He's changed the positions of some players, and that's worked out well. But I think you can't really judge him properly for another 2 or 3 years, but he's definitely starting to get his ideas across. And another thing about Mertesacker, away from actual playing with matches and stuff, is that he's doing a lot of work with the academy players with regards to mental health and things like that. And he's got this thing called the Academy Island, where the players can talk about how they're feeling mentally and how they want to progress. So that's something that I think is really good, especially given the current situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a change of culture, isn't it, with football? Because for so long, you kind of have to be this, you know, to make it in football, you're supposed to be a strong mental character. You're not supposed to display any kind of weaknesses. And Mertesacker himself was very open about his own struggles with anxiety and some mental health issues during his career. So trying to change that culture from an early age at Arsenal seems a very positive thing.
Yeah, it's definitely true. And I think one player who really fits that mould is Daniel Ballard. He's a defender and he's been training with the first team recently, but he actually got released twice by Arsenal, and then he got taken on again, and then he's last season he missed most of the season for injury, but he's still managed to carry on. And he said that Academy Ireland thing that Mertesacker brought in helped him as well. So Mertesacker's definitely made an impact. And but like I said, I don't think you can really judge too much yet. But the policy that he's got of bringing in these development players is really in stark contrast to what we were doing with Andriy Jonker about 5 years ago. We were signing Marlon and Dragomir and Ben Adelaide, some of the best youth players in the world. And now we're just trying to find other players who've been let go by other teams. So it's a real change in policy.
Do we know quite why that is the case? Obviously, there's, and you've written about this on Arseblog News, there is a crop of young players who have come through and they're part of the first team squad: Bukayo Saka, Eddie Nketiah, Reece Nelson, Joe Willock, and that sort of creates a little bit of a gap in terms of some of the age groups for the players that Steve Bould is going to work with, because these guys, at 19, 20 years of age, Saka is only 18, of course, are now part and parcel of the first team squad. So there is this little gap there. But what is the thought process and how are these players being identified? We read that Akinola was signed without anybody looking at him in person. He normally, you can see a player, you bring him in, you give him a trial and you see what he's like. And he was brought in the story goes, at least, based entirely on the video analysis that they did of him. So that in itself is a massive change. So you can see sort of the logic of bringing in these players at that age group to sort of fill the gap for Steve Bould and his coaches to work within the various teams. But the process of identifying those talents is markedly different, as you say.
They're still taking like some players on trial. Like George Lewis was on trial. They've got another player who was released by QPR who's coming for a trial next week. But the Akinola thing is really interesting. And I've seen like the video highlights of him, and he looks really good. But then I think you can make a video like that for like most youth players of their best like aspects, and then you don't really get to see like the mistakes they make or like what they're like as a person or things like that. So I think maybe for a one-off or something it could be okay, but as a long-term strategy I think it's probably not the best route to go down. But maybe it was partly due to the current situation where there aren't any like youth matches being played, so they were just looking at that and just taking what they could, really. But he did get quite a lot of like rave reviews for some of his performances for Huddersfield last season, but then Akinola, that is. But I read the other day that he went on loan to a non-league club, I think last season, and then the manager of that club said that he'd never think that a club like Arsenal would come in for him. So it seems like quite strange, really. But it kind of reminded me of the Coen Bamel signing, really, where... and that was like totally out of the blue. Like things like that don't normally happen at Arsenal. But with Bramall, he never really looked like making it. But he did play quite a lot of youth games, and he filled in 13 training sessions sometimes. And there was Semi Ajayi, who they signed about 7 years ago. That was quite a similar situation. He was a centre back. He trained with the first team like so many times just to fill in, really.
Right.
So sometimes it's just about making up the numbers in like training sessions and things like that.
I mean, it is a strange way of doing things. I mean, the George Lewis signing, one of his former clubs told him, look, you're not going to make it. You better find a club in the Norwegian third or fourth division. And all of a sudden, he's at Arsenal. And look, good luck to these guys. And maybe, you know, they need a chance. Maybe they need a break or better coaching or whatever it might be. It could work out. It does feel like a bit of a long shot, to be honest. And you mentioned changes to the scouting network and things like that. It occurs to me that, look, at youth level, things can be quite hit or miss. Somebody who looks really great at youth level doesn't make the grade. We've all seen that story play out time and time again. But when you look at some of the players who have come through the Arsenal youth system in the last number of years, and look, people will have watched Serge Gnabry this week, you know, Jeff, Ren Adelaide, Jeff, you mentioned Malin as well. I'm trying to think of the other one that I'm thinking of. Ismail Benacer. You know, players who have gone on from Arsenal to play for big clubs and do very, very well. You know, it doesn't feel like the scouting or the identification of talent at this level was really a big problem. The issue was finding a way to integrate these players into the first team and to give them the kind of minutes that they needed to develop as players, because those are some seriously good players that have come through our ranks and are no longer here.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's difficult when players have come from abroad, and like sometimes they want to go back to their home country eventually, like Gnabry did. Around that time as well, like when those players were here, like it was towards the end of Arsene Wenger's time at the club, and he wasn't really playing as many youngsters because he wanted to basically just win as many games as possible, and he didn't want to take too many risks. But it is difficult to retain these youngsters, especially when you've got so many competing for a place at the same time. So that's why I think that's why they're taking that approach now of giving like people like Willock and Katia have probably played more games than you'd expect them to, but they're doing that to like make sure that they're within the they want to stay at the club. But it is really difficult. You're always going to get top quality like youth players want to leave. The current situation with Balogun is another one. I think Arsenal could have probably managed that a bit better last season, but you know, and we didn't really give him a chance in like the cup games. So, and he hasn't played at all for the first team. And but I think if they're wanting, they're apparently demanding like £8 million for him. But he is a really talented player. And I think he could do well. But Championship clubs like looking at that, they're probably not going to pay £8 million for someone who hadn't played any first team football. So,
why do you think? Why do you think he didn't get the chances that maybe some of the other players did? Because you know you've written about him and how highly rated he is, and you know we've seen some of the video clips and the goals that he scored. You know, Arsenal do have a collection of young strikers. There's Tyrese John-Jules as well. Obviously, Eddie Nketiah is in there, who's probably a little more polished in terms of his development and the playing time that he's had at Leeds, etc., etc. But, you know, why has Balogun got to, or why has it got to a situation with him where it looks like he's going to go? I mean, have Arsenal tried to keep him, or is it a question that they're just sort of accepting the fact he's on his way, he wants to go?
Well, I think he didn't train with the first team like when quite a few youngsters did towards the end of last season. So I think it's looking like more likely he'll go now, and they're not going to like integrate him into the first team unless he says he's going to stay. But at the same time, if he doesn't get chances, he won't want to stay. So like, the approach doesn't really make much sense, really, to be honest. But I think if he was told like right now that he's going to get chances in the League Cup and maybe the Europa League like next season and train with the first team like all the time, I think he'd probably stay, but he hasn't been given those guarantees. And I think Nketiah is like not that much older than him as well. That's one of the problems, because, and also Arteta and Ljungberg rate Tyrese John-Jules like really highly as well. So they probably see John-Jules ahead of Balogun. I personally think Balogun's maybe slightly better, but I think maybe John-Jules is probably right now someone who fits their philosophy more, because he like works hard and chases after the ball. So maybe Balogun might not completely suit what Arteta wants as well.
There is a really interesting dynamic, isn't there, with Mikel Arteta at the, you know, at the club now. He's the head coach or the manager. Freddie Ljungberg, who was part of the under 23 setup, is part of the first team coaching setup. Per Mertesacker is the academy manager, a former teammate of Arteta. It feels like perhaps there are these relationships there which might make decision-making when it comes to these young players and who's ready, who's not, who's going to go on loan, who's got a first-team chance. You know, those, there can be, and I'm not saying this is true of people who've been there before, but there can be sometimes a bit of distance or even friction between the various departments at these levels. But that doesn't seem to be the case right now because of the relationships that these guys have.
Yeah, definitely. I think but when Ljungberg was like, in temporary charge like, last season, like, he started to bring a lot of the youth players like into the first team training sessions, and Arteta's carried that on as well. So he's always like looking at who the next prospects are. And a lot of those players who trained with the first team towards the end of last season, like Matt Smith and Trey Coyle and Zach Meddy, they've all gone on loan now. So there seems to be like more of a structure towards what Arsenal are doing. And when they send these players on loan, they're sending them to clubs that will probably like give them more game time. And it's interesting, they're looking at loaning them more to like League One clubs now rather than Championship teams.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably more likely to get more game time. And I think they have probably learned from the Gnabry situation that loaning him to West Brom was never going to be a good idea. But they're now looking for clubs that play like a similar style to Arsenal, like Swindon, where Matt Smith have gone, have been known for playing like passing football. So they're like really like doing things better now.
I mean, we have seen some of these guys. I mean, we talked about the crop of players who are in the first team, but some of the more senior youth players, if you like Matt Smith, like Zach Medley, Trey Coyle, have gone on loan. Medley and Coyle are at Gillingham. Matt Smith has gone to Swindon. They're going to play in League One next season. Are you expecting any others to go out on loan? It does feel like there might still be scope for a few more to go out and get some experience.
Yeah, I think there'll be a few. I think James Odienka is one. He was at Northampton in the second half of last season, but he is injured for most of that, so he'll probably go on loan again. John Jules could go on loan if he's not needed in the first team. Ozzie Tutu is a difficult one, but he's a bit older, and we probably need to either promote him or sell him. But I think he could maybe get a chance at Arsenal if like certain players leave. But I think they need to loan out probably two or three more players now. But they've got a new like batch of scholars with about 16 players in who are, and like almost all of them are really, really good players. And so they'll want to step up quite quickly. So they've got to make space for them and all of these other new players they've just brought in. It means they've got probably too many players at youth level at the moment. So some players will have to leave like permanently or online.
Really. Mm. Okay. Well, look, one of the things that people really enjoy about the coverage of the youth team and the greater knowledge and expertise that we have now, you know, thanks to the work that you do and everything else is, you know, identifying young players who we can pin all our hopes on and hope that they're going to become the next big thing. It's unrealistic, of course, but it is nice to sort of track the development of some of the most highly rated young players at the club. So can you give us three players for the upcoming season that Arsenal fans should keep an eye on? Players who aren't just exciting at this level, but who probably have a chance to make it if things go well for them. And we know a lot of things have to fall into place, but all the same, are there three players you can think of who we really should keep an eye on?
Well, one is Ben Cottrell. He's a central midfielder. He's already played quite a bit for the under-23s, but now he's stepped up permanently. He's quite short, but he's a really good passer, and I think he could maybe get involved with the first team in some capacity next season, maybe in the Europa League. There's another midfielder as well, Catan Sergean. He's Romanian. He joined last year, and he was really good in his first season. He's like very good technically. I think he's definitely one of the best players in the academy. And I think he's been promoted to the under-23 squad, even though he can still play for the under-18s, which shows like how highly rated he is. And the other one is a goalkeeper, Arthur Okonkwo. He's been out for a year because he had a health problem, but he's thankfully like back in training now, and he seems like he's fully fit. And prior to that, he was doing really well. He made some excellent saves for the under-23s. He was like really commanding in his penalty area. He actually trained for the first team when he was like 15, I think, when Wenger was still there. And he's a really good player, goalkeeper. But I think but there's five goalkeepers in the under-23s, so he might not play all the time, but he definitely, if he can get back to the level he was before, I think he could potentially make the break for eventually.
All right. Well, look, those are three names, and there are plenty of others at youth level. I mean, Miguel Aziz is another one that people think very highly of, and we've mentioned some of them, Tyrese John-Jules, Sam Greenwood, who was a fairly high-profile capture. But look, do we know yet when the under-23 season, Premier League 2 season, is starting?
It hasn't been confirmed yet, but there's been talk that it's going to be next month, and they're also in the leasing.com trophy, which starts next month as well. But they haven't played any games since March, so they'll probably need like a couple of friendlies before that. But yeah.
For sure. Okay, well, look, when it does start, of course, you'll be covering all the stuff and all the action and all the stories about the youth team and the players and the results over on Arsblog News and on your own site, Arsenal Youth. George, great to talk to you. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed to George. You can find him on Twitter at George Bird, but that's George with a J, George Bird. He's also our regular youth correspondent for Arsblog News. You'll find his stuff and all the new stories on there, and his own blog as well, which is arsenalyouth.wordpress.com. That's arsenalyouth.wordpress.com. Just want to give a shout to those of you who are interested in fantasy football, of which I'm not really one of those people, but I've got a bit of an interest this season, because over on our Patreon, we are doing a fantasy football league. It has been set up. If you you are an Arseplug member on Patreon, you can join. There are prizes, cash prizes, for first, second, and third place. We're going to give a mini trophy to whoever finishes in fourth. My aim is to finish last, dead last. I'm going to pick a team. In fact, I've already picked a team. I've entered it. It is in the Arseblog Patreon Members Fantasy Football League, and that's it. I'm not touching it. I'm not even going to look at the fantasy football page. I'm not going to make any substitutions or anything like that. I don't think I've even picked a captain. And if I don't finish dead last with a record number of no points, or certainly a record low number of points, I am going to be very disappointed indeed. If you want to get involved, if you're an Arseblog member on Patreon, you can find the details on the Patreon page. It's also in the Discord. There is a channel in the Discord chat, and you can do all your fantasy football stuff in there. If you want to get involved, if you're not already an Arseblog member on Patreon, patreon.com/Arseblog. You can join for a fiver a month, and you get access to that and all the other bits and pieces that go along with it. Extra bonus transfer podcast, live streams, all the other stuff. It's all there. patreon.com/arseblog. Right. Have yourselves a great weekend, folks. James and I will be here on Monday with an Arsecast Extra chatting about who knows what. I said this last weekend, at the end of the last Arsecast, who knows what we'll be talking about on Monday. And boy, did we have plenty to get through. So you never know with this football club. There's just so much going on. So, you know, let's see where we are on Monday and what we've got to talk about. In the meantime, have a good one. Take it easy. We'll catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay, look, here's the inside scoop on Gabriel from Lille, right? Don't tell anybody this, but he's definitely going to make his mind up tomorrow. And if it's not tomorrow, it's the day after. Or possibly the day after that. Now, go forward in time to the day after tomorrow, in which case it would be today then. And there's literally no question whatsoever that by tomorrow then, which is 3 days from now because we've gone forward in time, that tomorrow, or the tomorrow after that, he will have made a decision about which choice he is going to make, about when precisely he will make his mind up and bring the whole thing to a conclusion, and of course the resolution for that will be settled possibly tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.